final case of the morning is United States against Boyle. Mr. Ackerman.
Good morning. Please, the court, I'm Alan Ackerman representing John Boyle.
And well-dressed, too, Mr. Ackerman. Well,
you're very dressed. Kind, Your Honor. And I'm not touching the whatever this is. Actually, I'm afraid to, if the truth be known.
Now electrified.
That's right.
Based on government counsel, I think they figured out some method. But that said, Mr. Boyle is, in the scheme of Chicago politics, a minor villain. He succumbed to the culture, I'll call it. And going back a few years, and I'll save the government the trouble of reminding the court that he was known as John Quarters Boyle because a decade or so earlier he flitched some money from the tollway in the...
This is one, it's purely curiosity, and I think if Judge Easterbrook will indulge me, sure. I want to know, how do you get rid of all those quarters?
Right. Millions.
I think that
millions.
Was...
Millions.
That may have been pre-Riverboat.
Yeah,
so.
Paul Powell used to take the quarters out of the Coca-Cola machines at the Secretary of State's office, but again, there weren't that many. This is an enormous number of quarters.
My sense is he bought a lot of Pepsi-Cola.
Yeah.
Maybe he was trying to get the
went
cans.
Went to the wall a lot. Played games, video.
He did what he
I'm
did.
I'm sorry. There's nothing to do with your case.
Oh, sure it does. Yeah. No, that's part of the anecdotal background.
Amen.
The government charged, and Mr. Boyle acknowledged, that from approximately 2000 to 2004, he was intimately involved with the hired truck program, which was another City of Chicago taxpayer ripoff. It essentially involved the titular head of the hired truck program, a gentleman named Angelo Torres, and he had the wherewithal to get private contractors, truckers, to do that which the City of Chicago ordinarily would do. And this program was theoretically set up to save the city money, which, of course, it never happened. Now, Mr. Boyle, as he's a part of the political structure, he was a precinct captain, and he was working for, as I recall, Streets and Sanitation for a while. And he was politically savvy enough to ingratiate himself with the powers that be so that he had the wherewithal to go to various private trucking contractors and say, either do you want to get into the program? If you do, it's going to cost you X. Or if you're already in the program and you want to stay in the program, it's going to cost you Y. Or if you want to enhance your position in the program, it'll cost you Z. And this money would be accumulated and passed on to others. He was arrested in...
Well, let me go back to that, Mr. Ackerman. So he clearly knew who he was going to with these various propositions, but he refused to give these people up. And so I guess I have a problem with that because the government, you know, position is that he should have fully cooperated and provided that, and that goes to acceptance of responsibility because he was the one going to meet with everybody.
Not everybody.
Not
but
everybody.
Judge,
but with
Judge
a number
Williams,
of people.
As is your tradition, you have put your finger on one of the thorny, vexing questions, and that is simply this. I've committed X and Y offenses. I see the government within 3 days of my arrest. I acknowledge what I did. I not only acknowledge what I did, I identify various properties that might be involved in a theoretical forfeiture. Thereafter, I plead guilty. And as part of my plea, and it's a blind plea, part of my plea, I agree with the district court, there is no written plea agreement, that I will acknowledge whatever the government relates as a factual basis. And the government's factual basis was fairly extensive. It included not only the taxpayer ripoffs, but it included an IRS count, I believe it was count 20 or 22. And Mr. Boyle candidly acknowledged all of it. The government's position is stated directly, it's on the acceptance part of it. It wasn't extraordinary. And you get to the extraordinary prong because of the theoretical obstruction. The theoretical obstruction is tongue-in-cheek in our view. And by tongue-in-cheek, all I mean is this. The government was well aware that there was a checking account which several thousands of dollars went through the checking account. After Mr. Boyle made out a CJA affidavit which claimed he had no funds in substance, the government brought this to the attention of the United States Magistrate Judge. R-72 in the record, which is the defendant's sentencing memorandum, recites without contradiction from the government that within 2 or 3 days, Mr. Boyle explained to the United States Magistrate, who was Magistrate Keyes, that, look, that money wasn't mine. I did not really understand what it is I'm supposed to do, but the money isn't mine. It's part of this real estate stuff that I'm involved in. And with that, he goes and explains to the government and to the USPO the 3 or 4 or 5 properties that are currently the subject of ongoing forfeiture proceedings. He pleads guilty. He gets a 7-year sentence because he is deprived of acceptance, and the deprivation, going back to Judge Williams' question, is based on the proposition that his acceptance was not extraordinary, and it only had to be extraordinary because of the theoretical obstruction. So if you remove or delete the extraordinary, then you have a man not only fessing up to everything he did publicly before the court, but to the government and the USPO.
I understood, Albert Strackerman, that there were people he refused to disclose as the recipients of the money he was taking.
I believe that's accurate.
And that's what I think they rely on for the obstruction.
No.
No?
They rely on the obstruction for, number one, when he theoretically fess up correct information on the CJA form. And secondly, they claim that with the USPO, the United States Probation Officer, there was some lack of candor relating to funds, and that's nonsense because it's never explained. The fact of the matter is the government forfeited
the enhancement for obstruction of justice.
I can't hear you.
So why aren't you challenging the enhancement for obstruction of justice?
It's part of my issue on review of the court, please. I believe I've challenged both the lack of acceptance.
Just to be arguing for a reduction for acceptance of responsibility, notwithstanding the enhancement.
I believe my issue is whether I'll have to put my glasses on. But. Whether the sentencing court committed prejudicial error in rejecting downward adjustment for acceptance while providing an upward adjustment for obstruction. I think, literally read, of course, Your Honor is correct. If you take a broader approach to it, we're really challenging both. If I have any time left, I'll reserve it, and I thank you for your candor.
Mr. Miller.
May it please the court, Barry Miller for the United States. With respect to obstruction, the obstruction did not just occur post-arrest, though there were 2 instances of obstruction post-arrest that are described in the brief and came out of the pre-sentence report. There was also the pre-arrest obstruction here. There was an instruction to shred documents, an instruction to lie, and an instruction to not talk to the FBI. Those matters were not in dispute below, and I had not understood them to be disputed here. Indeed, in the initial brief, quoting from page 13 of counsel's brief, here the obstruction occurred conceded by Boyle during the investigation. So there is no basis in this court for disputing what was undisputed below, that the enhancement for obstruction of justice was appropriate. The question is whether there was clear error in finding that there was no extraordinary acceptance. And there was no such clear error because, for the reasons as Judge Williams and Judge Bauer referred to, there wasn't even complete acceptance under normal standards, let alone extraordinary acceptance after obstruction. Just a couple of factual matters. Mr. Boyle did not completely acknowledge what he and others did. He did not give an extensive factual basis or admit to an extensive factual basis during his plea below. In fact, there was a two-part plea where the first part he wouldn't agree to and we had to stop, and a narrow factual basis to just two counts were pled below. His factual basis to his initial plea didn't even include the original obstruction count with which he was charged. With respect to where did the quarters go, Judge Bauer? We don't know the answer to that question.
I was afraid of that.
Because he wouldn't.
I understand where money goes, but I don't know how you can do it in quarters.
He wouldn't tell the court the first time in 1993, and that's part of why acceptance was denied in his first appeal.
Someplace, somewhere, there's a hole in the ground with an enormous number of quarters.
Well, or the other possibility is if the co-schemers got it then and he didn't tell the government and the court who the co-schemers were in that time.
Yeah, even a co-schemer is going to have one problem getting rid of all those quarters. How many dollars?
There were $4 million was the amount of the theft then.
That'd be 16 million quarters.
Don't know in what form it was. Some of it could have been bills. I don't know, Your Honor.
No. Not the way he was taking it. It couldn't have been bills. It had to be quarters.
So for all of these reasons, believe that Judge Holderman did not clearly err in his finding and ask that the court affirm the sentence. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Ackerman?
Very brief. The only thing I challenge of my opponent's statement, and he was very fair with the court, once he was arrested, he immediately acknowledged having told the other gentleman who he identified that he had asked him to lie, shred the papers, and whatnot. So that's no harm, no foul. Regarding the actual blind guilty plea on April 5 of 05, it was the government's position that he either acknowledged everything they had to say or there would be no plea. And so he did. So I'm sure government counsel did not mean to suggest that it was a watered-down plea.
Mr. Ackerman, I just want to hear your response to this question. Your creative response, I'm sure no doubt it would be, why should the district court have given him acceptance when he was bragging in open court about refusing to cooperate with the government's investigation?
If acceptance of responsibility involves your acts, not the acts of others, your illegal or improper acts, then he more than satisfied the standard. On the other hand, and candidly, if acceptance means dragging in everybody with whom you dealt, then it was not acceptance. That's as candid as I can be. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will be in recess until next week.